Hello everyone, this is Dave the SEO, and today I'm going to be answering SEO's agentic AI questions. Talking about, is agentic search optimization still SEO? And how to start optimizing for interactive AI agents now, including a technical side of that. Okay, so let's start off with a summary of what we're going to talk about today. Or if you don't have much time, you can use this to decide whether you want to hear the whole thing. So agentic search optimization is about preparing websites for future where we're going to have AI agents that act on users' behalf. So that's researching, certainly, but also comparing, booking, and a lot more besides. So as SEOs, we are very well placed to become agentic AI optimizers. And a big part of it is the technical optimization side of things. We now need to think in terms of machine accessibility, not just search engine accessibility, and that's to content and to interactions that AI agents are going to need to use. The evolution of technical search optimization includes working now on things like semantic HTML we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about how we can use WCAG 2.1 accessibility standards to try and make sure that our sites also accessible to AI agents, how we can expand schema, and how we can make the back end of our websites machine readable endpoints and things like APIs and databases to make sure that content is findable but is also actionable by AIs without users necessarily needing to ever actually come onto our websites anymore. So we need to future-proof now to make sure that agentic systems can access our sites as easily as possible, and ideally more easily than our competitors' sites. So let's answer first, what is agentic AI and agentic search? So agentic AI, to put it in most simple way I can, is using your AI tool as a personal assistant rather than simply just using it as a research engine, which is kind of what AI is been for so far, or at least what we've been focusing on in terms of SEO. If I want to put it another way, agentic AI refers to systems that don't just answer questions, but can act on behalf of users outside of the AI's own environment. So that could be performing tasks like making bookings, buying products and services, compiling research. So these systems are shifting how people interact with the web. It's not necessarily going to be via websites anymore. So we need to start thinking about our web offering more than just the website, and the website's only one part of that. Now, we knew that this is the way these tools were going to go, but I think we're at the point now where it is just becoming practical for more users to have access without having to build their own tools, without having to manually set up API access. And part of the reason for that is because Model Context Protocol now exists, which we're going to talk about a little bit, although I have another article, which is soon going to be another audio recording, that is about Model Context Protocol, and we'll go into a lot more detail. But we will mention it a bit today. So agentic search, more specifically than agentic AI, so that includes doing search, the AI agent doing search for us, visiting relevant pages for us, providing us with only information that is actually relevant to our purpose, rather than presenting everything to us and letting us decide which sites to look at and what to do next. Now, we can, of course, still make the decision if we want to take an action, but it may even get to the point where we actually pass decision-making and actions to the interactive AI agent. So we might be able to say to them, for example, I need a new X, my budget is X, I want a red one ideally, but I wouldn't mind a blue one, just go and make it happen. In the same way we might do with a personal assistant. Not that I have a personal assistant that I do that with. just to be, make that clear. This is, you know, a major shift in how users are going to interact. Not everyone's going to start doing this the moment it's available, but some people will, at least for some interactions. So we need to now think in terms of website optimization for content accessibility, but also interaction accessibility to those AI agents. And this is something that a lot of websites certainly, but even a lot of platforms are ill prepared for. So, for example, if you're on a different e-commerce platform, some e-commerce platforms are already preparing for this with making it as easy as possible to make your API, your backend, available to AI agents, and others are further behind. So where are we right now with agentic search and agentic AI in general? So Google I/O 2025, if you haven't watched the keynote, please go away and watch that. You can even pause this now so we know what we're talking about. The announcement around Google's Project Mariner as part of Gemini was very interesting, very telling. Initially, it's going to be available through Gemini Ultra, so that's the kind of super expensive version, this agentic version of Gemini. But we get to see a little bit of what it's able to do. The plan is for Project Mariner to complete complex web-based tasks completely autonomously. That's what it's being created for. For now, that doesn't include yet things like making purchases, but that's definitely going to be the future. But it's already able to compare information across sites, compile things, compare products, consider the importance of reviews, and it can even fill out some web forms or do things like appointment booking. And OpenAI, Perplexity, and Rewind are all developing similar features. So we'll have to see what OpenAI have to say at their next Dev Day event, but probably something similar. So we need to, you know, be ready for this to move fast. Every one of these companies competing in the AI space is going to want to get that first mover advantage. Their limitation is going to be how many sites the agents are actually able to interact with and how successfully and easily they can get data from those websites. Now, in the Google I/O 2025 keynote, they did a demonstration using Gemini's agent mode, and the task was finding suitable apartment listings based on a few specifications, number of people who are going to live there, the area, the budget, and a few other things. And all the listings that came back came from Zillow. Now, Zillow have had long association with Google, and they have presumably been testing things, and Google have been telling them what the standards are that they want to use. And so Zillow presumably is adequately, you know, machine accessible to make that happen. But Google did mention within the keynote using MCP, using Model Context Protocol. I only mentioned it very briefly, but that is, you know, a sign that Google wants to use that standard, and Claude and others have also come out to say that that is the standard that is going to be used. And we're going to talk a little bit more in a minute about what Model Context Protocol is, but it is basically a layer that allows AI agents to access your endpoints like APIs and databases, which presumably Zillow had already set up. But yeah, you know, Zillow now in a situation where, you know, people using Gemini Ultra potentially can say to Gemini, like, this is the type of apartment I'm looking for, and rather than spending ages searching, they get some options that match their needs coming back. And they can then say to the AI agent, okay, I'm interested in that one. Yes, book an appointment for that one. Oh, and that one as well. Yeah, actually, yeah, book an appointment for me to see that one. And the AI agent can check when you've got availability. So anyone's kind of thinking, oh, well, who's going to want to, you know, kind of give this stuff to AI agents? It saves so much time. So let's go for another example of how this could be useful. This one, not from Google or anybody, but just what I think is a useful example. Let's say this is for a business purpose, and we've got a contract for a CRM tool in our business. That's contract's coming to an end, and we want to check out features of some other CRM tools. Now, it might be that when we chose this CRM tool, what we did was we did a number of searches looking for the best rated CRMs, the latest developments, the best price ones, ones that have the most features, which ones have specific features that are important to us. And, you know, this might take a full day of time at work, visiting dozens of sites, making up a long list, maybe having a spreadsheet compiling the pros and cons of each one to try and keep track of, you know, all this different information we're finding, all this different research we're doing. Then we maybe turn that into a short list, and from that short list, we're going to book some demo tools with each provider. So easily a day's work, if we're really taking it seriously. And we might be in the past like, oh, well, that's a, you know, good use of time, because this is a really important tool for our business. We want to get it right. But obviously, you still want to save time if you can, right? So now what you can do is you can go to your AI agent. You can tell the AI agent what factors are important. What are the must-haves? What are the nice-to-haves? How much you actually want to spend? What we like and dislike about our current software? And it'll do all the researching, it will review things, it will bring everything together. Now, even basic AI tools out of the box can basically do that at the moment. But the limitation is how easily they can access that information, how reliably they can access that information. So there's one opportunity there to make that information as accessible as possible for our CRM tool, in this case, if we were doing SEO for them. But now what we can do is we can say to our AI tool, okay, great, those different options there sound fantastic. Yeah, book me demo calls for three or four of these, and you can check my calendar as well, because you've got access to that. So if we are, you know, one of those four tools and our site doesn't have the ability for the AI agent to book appointments on a user's behalf, then maybe we're going to miss out. Maybe they'll just talk to the other three and they won't, you know, they'll be impressed by them, they won't bother to get round to book an appointment. So there's an opportunity there, and maybe actually we've got the opportunity to initially be the only one, or one of only one or two, where that's possible. Is this still search? You know, it's still somebody searching for information. They're not actually coming to our website. They're just not searching for our website anymore, right? So is agentic search optimization still SEO? So agentic search, I think we know, if we're talking about, is it organic search? That's an easy yes. Is it earned search? That's an easy yes. Is it search optimization? That's an easy yes. Maybe it's not search engine optimization anymore, because when we think of search engines, we're thinking of Google and so on. But you could still say it is a search engine, or it's a research engine. But the important thing is how clients see it. And if clients see, okay, well, this is what search engine optimization is good for. It has moved from Google to these AI agents, but we're still doing the same thing. We're still bringing in the same traffic. In fact, we're bringing in, you know, potentially very qualified leads because the AI agent has done the pre-qualification for us. Then I think, you know, the SEO industry is still exists. It's just, we're doing something slightly different. And SEO on traditional search isn't going anywhere for a while. Not everyone's going to, you know, move to this tomorrow. So I'm definitely not saying SEO is dead, just to make that very, very clear. So all parts of what we do as SEOs are still happening. And they're just evolving. Building EEAT signals is more important than ever. It really is. Having the right information to match the intent of the AI agent and the user behind that is really important. Making it as easy as possible for the AI agent coming to the page. It wants to find facts. It wants to, you know, find information it can compare against other sites. It wants to find in this case, what are the features as easily as possible. And then technical SEO is evolving as well. So we now need to think not just in terms of search engine accessibility, we need to think in terms of machine accessibility, and not just to our website, to the front end of our website, but also to the back end of our web offering, let's call it. But that's still happening too. though it is going to be different, because AI agents don't crawl web pages in the same way as search engines do. So even if we, before we think about access to the back end of the web offering, if the AI agents are, for the time being, having to look at websites because they don't have any other access, they are not looking at them in the same way search engines do. They are not necessarily rendering the pages, for example. They are not following links to try and find information. If they don't know the page already exists and have some idea what's on that page, they're not necessarily going to come to it. But at the same time, a lot of what we are doing for technical agentic search optimization is the same, or it's the same as actually what we've been doing in terms of accessibility for humans and meeting WCAG 2.1 standards, which is another area which isn't necessarily SEO. Well, it isn't SEO, but it's something that often has fallen into the laps of SEOs or people who are more generally organic kind of team people. So you want to make sure now that you're future-proofing your websites for agentic search. And that's especially the case if you've got a migration coming up, because otherwise you may have to migrate again in another year's time to make sure you've actually got a site that's fit for purpose for this new world of agentic AI and agentic search. So for your site to be kind of fully compliant with the needs of AI agents, let's for now just talk about the front end and the websites. Some of the things you can do right now include semantic HTML. So making sure that you're using the right tags that explain the elements on your pages. So that can be things like using article tags, nav tags, header tags, but also using various labels such as ARIA labels to explain what different elements on the page do. So those are, going to be things like main content, but also things like click to buy, and using the right tags to make sure that AI agents can understand what the different elements on the page are. Making sure that H tags are used properly for actual headings, not just using them as a way to add visual CSS styles to different parts of the page, meaning you end up with headings within your menus and so on. Please, please, please don't do that. Next thing you can do, WCAG 2.1. You should already be at AA level for that, particularly if you're website is available in the EU or you're selling to the EU. Otherwise, you may be getting some fines very soon. Unfortunately, there's a lot of sites out there that don't reach those standards. Hopefully, yours isn't one of them. but if you reach those standards, one of the things that's an advantage is that your site is going to be easy to understand and read by a screen reader, because it understands what the different parts of the page are, it understands the order of the page. And those things are going to be important for AI agents as well. If you use a screen reader to look at some pages on your site, maybe look at each of your main templates, if the screen reader can read them properly, then probably an AI agent can. So look out for things like a screen reader focusing on elements on the page that don't need reading at all, reading content in the wrong order, missing important content altogether, not seeing any images or the alt tags for images. So AI agents are going to potentially have the same issues if they are trying to access your web pages. Make sure you are checking that reviews and ratings are visible on the page, ideally in your source code, and they're associated with the products properly, that you've got your schema, your structured data for products in place. Because a lot of the time, as I say, AI agents may not render the entire page. Sometimes they will, particularly if as a user you are asking them to render an entire page and check an entire page. The other problem is sometimes they can't. Sometimes they are blocked. It might be that they're blocked from the entire page. It might be blocked that they're blocked from certain resources. In you know, often bots are going to be blocked from checkouts. So don't block bots from checkouts. Don't block them from things like appointment booking pages, form pages, things that maybe didn't actually have SEO value, but actually have value for an AI agent to be able to find, to be able to point users towards. But also think about, are you just blocking bots from your site in general? Now, you've probably got security in place to stop DDoS attacks and stop scrapers and so on, or you may well do. But are you accidentally blocking AI agents, blocking LLMs from your site? I often find that I'm trying to get ChatGPT to access certain pages on certain sites, and it can't because it is getting blocked. It's getting shown a capture which it can't solve, for example. So please think about that. Avoid that. Don't rely on single page applications. Try not to rely on too much JavaScript. As I say, ideally you want the content to be in the source code in case the AI agent doesn't decide to render anything at all, or can't. And again, it might be that in the past, you know, you had single page applications for your checkout process, for your quote, getting a quote process. And it didn't matter because they didn't really have SEO value, and you didn't need to have those individual bits of that form crawled. But now actually you want those to be accessible to AI agents. So you need to think about that. So at the moment, if you've got a quote form to get a quote, and it's all done through a single page application and that updates, you would be much better off having each page of that form on a different URL. You know, you can potentially move to obviously server-side rendering, but if you're relying on client-side rendering, it's all on one URL, then that's going to get messy. Schema. Use all the schema.org that is relevant, not just the 30 schema classes that Google Search officially supports, things like article, product, event. There's 800 different schema classes, so if there's one that's relevant to your page, use it to try and make it as easy as possible for AI agents to understand your page just from the structured data. And you don't have to just have things like, you know, the product name and the price within the structured data. You can add schema structured data to everything, including the content, including the product descriptions, can all be within JSON-LD structured data to make it as easy as possible. And potentially that's one solution if your site does rely on JavaScript to actually render content. Well, you could actually, you know, put that content into JSON-LD in the header, in the source code, as another way to grant that access. So I've got another piece of content about Model Context Protocol, which is going to go into more detail. But let's talk a little bit about Model Context Protocol and talk about it in relationship to basically how are we going to give AI agents access to the back end of our websites or our web offering. So we may well have an API set up, or we can set up an API and make it accessible to anyone who can find it, you know, including AI agents, but AI agents don't know what is and isn't possible. They're going to have trouble finding them. Model Context Protocol exists as a kind of basically a translation layer to put requests from an AI agent into the right language to get information from an API or from a database, whatever the endpoint might be, and then for that take that information that comes back and put it into the right language in a JSON structured data format for the AI agent to understand. It also tells the AI agent in the first place what's actually possible to do via this MCP server. So you can say, okay, you can use this to access product information from this website, or you can use it to access product information and also to you know, create an account to make a purchase, all the different things that are possible. Without that, AI agents, even if they know an API exists, don't really know how to then use that API. So it's a really significant step forward. Now we know, well, now we have that, is why now is a good point to start thinking about how we're going to make that accessible and how we're going to get that set up and what exactly do we actually want to grant access to AI agents. What might we want to give them access to in the future, but maybe, you know, we're future-proofing, so that's an option we can turn off for things like setting up an account, but maybe we don't want to right now. And even things like granting access to specific AI agents. So maybe there's going to be some AI agents who we are happy that they have a policy where a user has to read the terms and conditions, for example, and there's others that don't have that in place. And so we don't, you know, we might only want to give access to certain agents, for example. As I say, you know, we can start this now. There are other things as well. These are just some of the main things we can start thinking about and working on. If you're migrating, then you need to think about it now. If you're not migrating, then I still recommend you start thinking about it now. I have a comprehensive audit for machine, for AI accessibility that I can run. So if you're interested in that, get in touch with me. I have a basic version for all sites and then an extended version specifically for the needs of e-commerce sites. Thank you very much for listening. I hope that's been interesting. Get in contact with me and let's keep the conversation going.